Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio.
Well, hello everyone and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's AEW NXT Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be covering both NXT and AEW Dynamite at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, of course, you can hit us up in the chat room. We can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. A lot to talk about, so we will get right to it. But first, I do need to say this. It seems in the last, let's say 2 weeks, a tremendous amount of blog shows and podcasts on the world of professional wrestling have suddenly taken up the stance that WWE is being disrespectful to their fans. And every time I hear this, I shake my head because for 5 months, 6 months, this show has been telling you this exact same thing and getting people calling us, mailing us, saying, that's ridiculous. Why would they do that? Now, because a couple of people who've been in this a bit longer than we have decided I'm right. They're a genius. So I just want everyone to remember all of the wonderful people who listen to this show. Where you first heard the words, the WWE no longer respects their fans because you are not their primary source of income any longer. I want you to remember where you heard those words and how long ago, because just now everybody else is catching up to speed. Just now, everybody else is, you know what I think is happening? Really? Why, that's an amazing analogy. You're a wrestling genius. Yeah. Except we had it 7 months ago. Not that it's not obvious. I mean, the WWE can't make it any more obvious. They can't make it any more obvious. With the premiere of AEW. The WWE thumbed their nose at the audience. Literally thumbed their nose at the audience and gave them crap. Gave them crap at a pay-per-view. Night before. But I just thought it was ironic that now suddenly these deep analytic minds in the wrestling world said, you know what I just thought of the other day? It seems to me the WWE may be disrespecting their fans a little bit because it's just occurred to me that their primary source of income might not really be the fans ordering the network or even coming through the gates. You think? Unbelievable. By the way, have you seen that brand new movie called Iron Man? It's a wonderful movie. I wonder if they'll ever do an Avengers movie. I mean, you guys are so far behind, and you're the same people who told me I was full of crap. Welcome to the real world. But we don't know anything. What do we know? What do we know about wrestling? Anyway, AEW NXT Week 2. Not sure what the ratings were. I will check later. I'm assuming AEW won again. And I will tell you this. They deserve the win. AEW put on a very good show. a very, very strong show Wednesday. Now, what is their downfall? You say, well, their downfall is a lot of the live audience certainly knows who the wrestlers are. Perhaps if you're, you know, watching on television and you're not that familiar with AEW, maybe you don't. I'm sure you probably know who Jon Moxley is. You know who Chris Jericho is. You probably know Dustin Rhodes. But what they have done is they have managed to combine those people you do know with people you don't and logically progress their characters so that now people you don't are tied to people you do. Thus, you're interested in the people you don't. And within a couple of weeks, and I mean just a couple of weeks, fans are already starting to get invested in characters they probably didn't know prior to the debut of Dynamite. And that is showing really good wrestling sense. Their sense of professional wrestling and how it needs to be displayed to fans, to engage fans, has been spot on. Spot on. Now, whether they have the ability to create those gigantic stars like the WWE, I still have my doubts. I have severe doubts about that. But if you are a fan of professional wrestling, not a WWE fan, just a fan of professional wrestling, you're being well represented, because what they're doing is, it's very hard to explain except to say this. The WWE feels no matter what they do, they're right. And you're wrong if you don't like it. But they don't care if you don't like it, because they are 100% convinced you will not turn the program off. They are 100% convinced that you are WWE bound forever. And much like a sports team, you know, you say, oh, no, I'm not leaving. I know we've been in last place for 17 straight years, but I'm a diehard fan. They believe your loyalty to their brand is that strong. They believe it. See, wrestling is weird. If you happen to be like a Mets fan like me, if the Mets trade away a couple of players, even if I like those players, which they have in the past, I still follow the Mets. I don't follow that player. I don't say, well, I don't know, wherever he's going, that's my new favorite team. You don't really do that. Wrestling is different. You lose a couple of key people that people enjoy watching perform, or they perform much better, you start to lose that. Plus, the disrespect becomes a factor, especially when you're being shown respect by something else. And in this case, it's AEW. Now, I know that there are people, even on our own personal Facebook group, who say, look, I tried AEW. I don't like it. I watched it twice now. I'm not impressed. Okay, that's fine. But I think if you have to ask yourself why you're not impressed, it's probably because you're not invested in the characters. You don't really know them. A lot of the guys are small. You don't see that big, larger-than-life people and go, oh, look at that guy, or, oh, I know what this guy's capable of. You're just like, who is this loudmouth? Who is this MJF guy? I don't know who he is. Who is this guy? I don't know who he is. Who is these people jumping around? I don't know who they are. So you're not emotionally invested. But if you were to compare it side by side with WWE as far as what it's giving the fans, you would probably see that AEW is treating the fans with more respect, a lot more respect. The close to this week's AEW, where so much happened with MJF coming down and saving Cody Rhodes when it looked like he might turn on him, that's classic wrestling. He's a heel. Cody Rhodes isn't. Is he going to turn on Cody and join the heels? No, he's not. For now. No, he's not. But can you trust him? That's his best friend. And even though he's hated, he made the right move this time. It sets up so much. And in the course of that, you've introduced three or four characters who are feuding, and you're saying, oh, okay, well, here comes this guy because he's feuding with him. It's not something you can do every single week, or it becomes WCW. But second week out in the program, it's actually a stroke of genius because, again, you're tying people that the audience may not know to people the audience certainly does know. And that is an important factor because suddenly they become important. Let's say I start a federation and I have Mr. X, Mr. Y, and Mr. Z, and you don't know who they are. But I also have Seth Rollins, AJ Styles, and Randy Orton. Well, I could put Seth Rollins against Randy Orton all day long, and then Mr. X against Mr. Y all day long. You're only going to want to care about Seth Rollins and Randy Orton. But I put Mr. Y against Randy Orton and make it mean something, all of a sudden Mr. Y means something. Well, I know who Randy Orton is, and wow, this guy's giving Randy Orton all he can handle, and Seth Rollins is, and oh my God, look what Mr. X did to him. That's smart. That's smart wrestling. It's smart wrestling presentation because you're captivating the fans and you're bringing them new characters that they can hang on to. Now, over in the NXT, you see, the NXT is getting the disbenefit of being associated with the WWE. In other words, NXT is putting on a fine program. And I don't think they're disrespecting their fans. But they're a WWE product and they're tied to the WWE. And in doing so, they are getting the WWE rub, which is, F the WWE. The WWE has become their own Roman Reigns. Remember when it was fashionable to just boo Roman Reigns for no reason? Well, now it's fashionable to hate the WWE, but there is some reason. So over on NXT, we get a pretty good show. Leo Rush becomes the new Cruiserweight Champion. We get to see the buildup of Rhea Ripley, who's going to definitely go against Shayna Baszler, and that's looking good. We get some damn good wrestling. But because of the rub of being WWE's product, the fans still have a bad taste in their mouth. The fans still have, yeah, but. And AEW is capitalizing on that. They're capitalizing on that very strongly. And you can bet that that's Cody Rhodes doing. Now, again, I've had very limited conversations with Cody Rhodes. He's always came off as very affable and friendly and forthcoming and honest. I don't know if he's blowing smoke up your ass. I don't know if he's saying, we're going to give the fans exactly what they want because you're the only ones that count. And then backstage says, goddamn idiot. I don't know. Or I don't know whether he's being dead honest and say, look, the only reason I'm even doing this is because that's what I want to do, is give the fans exactly what they want and let them appreciate it. I don't know what's true. I do know what my eyes see. And what my eyes see is you're delivering something that fans want. Sort of a no-frills, semi-old school mixed with new school product that engages its audience very rapidly. And this is what I was worried about when AEW first announced their TV deal. I said, four or five shows in, if people say, I don't know these people, I'm just not watching it because I just don't know them, then AEW has trouble. But from the first two shows, I have noticed that they have went out of their way. They have been over backwards to hook the people up that they want to promote that fans may not know with the people they want to promote that the fans certainly do know. And that is genius. That is precisely what needs to happen. And if it continues to happen, four or five shows in, these same people who say, I don't know who MJF is, I don't know who Hangman Page is going to say, not only do I know who he is, he's one of my favorites. And that is the genius of pro wrestling booking when it's done correctly, Mike.
It really is. And think about it, I'm tooling around YouTube, and there are different videos that are saying, well, the ratings for AEW are down a little bit. Well, the problem is down from what? You know, if
right.
The ratings are down from, I mean, they were astronomically high for the first show, right? So I mean, if they're down from that, then they're still very good ratings. So yeah, there's that, and you're right about they're introducing characters. Yeah, you've got Jericho, and you've got Jake Hager, and you've got Cody Rhodes and Dustin Rhodes and stuff like that. People you know, but I didn't know about MJF, and I didn't know about Sean Spears is a different thing because he's just another guy, another WWE guy under another name, but. You're slowly making us care about that character.
Yes, and what we're seeing here with AEW is some modern booking with some old school feel and also some respect to old school with Tully Blanchard managing and old school broadcast booth. They've combined styles. They've combined several elements, and I think that's very healthy, and I think that's very good. What I do think, though, more importantly, is that they are establishing characters that need to be established that I had my doubts they would be able to establish in their right way, because I really thought they were going to just go, well, run with the guys we know. Dean Ambrose, everybody knows him. Chris Jericho, everybody knows him. We got Jake Hager in, everybody knows him. Dustin Rhodes, everybody knows him. Cody, we all know Cody. So they'll just run with them. Give us 5 months, and we'll start to build somebody else up when we get old. That's what I thought they might do. And they have not done that. What they've done is said, yes, we're promoting those people, but we're going to hook them up with people who you may not know as well. And because they're getting that rub from the people you do know, they feel like a big deal. Now, MJF has a huge spot. And if you're sitting home saying, I don't know who this guy is, the one thing you do know, he establishes himself the first week as a loudmouth, obnoxious heel. This week, the announcers are able to say that's, you know, he idolizes Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes is the person who brought him up in this business. And even though they may not see eye to eye about certain things, he is Cody Rhodes' close friend and loyal friend. He comes out, and all the fans know who don't know him is he's a sneaky bastard, and it looks like Cody's going to get turned on again. And you get that classic wrestling moment where you say, yep, it's coming, but then no, he doesn't. He makes the right move. This causes the following emotions in fans. They pop for him. Because they think this is his come-to-Jesus moment. Okay, there's absolutely no way. Maybe I'm a bad guy. Maybe I'm a heel. Maybe I see things the wrong way. But this is my friend, and you're not going to hurt him. I've seen the light. But then before you can even say, well, it looks like a face turn, he pretty much flips heel again and starts mouthing off and doing his normal stuff. And you say, no, he hasn't changed. He's just Cody's friend. He's not changed his philosophy at all. He's just not going to let anything happen to Cody in front of him. That is an interesting dichotomy because now you're saying, well, we have a face in Cody and we have a heel in MJF, but they're friends. See, that never happens in the WWE. Roman Reigns tomorrow, if Eric Rowan tomorrow turns face, Roman Reigns will be tag teaming with him. I know you tried to kill me by hitting me with a car and pushing over scaffolding, but you're on my side now. So you're my friend. That happens way too much. This does not insult the fans' intelligence because it says, well, okay, they have a different philosophy in life, but they're still friends. And that means we're not going to expect anything different out of MJF. He's going to be that same guy, except him and Cody are friends. And we're just going to have to understand that. Gee, that's very different from wrestling, isn't it, Todd? Because normally the no heels are friends with faces in the WWE or vice versa.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I remember back in the day, you didn't see heels with friends on TV or heels with friends with faces. It's different. It's kind of different now with that. Now you got heels with friends with faces and faces friends with heels. It's a
also makes him a big deal because now fans who didn't know him said, well, I don't know who this guy is, but last week he was a complete schmuck and an asshole. And this week he came to this guy's rescue. He's an interesting character, isn't he? I'll have to keep an eye on him. That is a way to highlight someone you intend to use, Mike.
Right, and that still doesn't put it out of your mind the fact that at some point, yeah, he may like him now.
Right.
But, you know, it could be a turn that's going to happen. And then, you know, and again, they may not do that. They may make him one of these gray area people where he just, like we said before with some certain other people in the WWE, just have him, instead of, you know, just have him do the same stuff but to the heels, you know?
And this, exactly, Mike, and this is why I love having you on this broadcast, because you get it. What you said is actually more important than probably people think, and that is, you have bluffed us. We don't know where to turn now as fans. MJF is a heel. He saved a face. Cody is his friend. Half the audience is saying, yeah, but you just wait till down the road. He's going to turn on him. But we're not. Maybe he won't. Maybe he won't. Maybe they'll just flip him face. Maybe he'll get so popular they'll say, well, we'll have to flip him face. So half the fans are saying that's what's going to happen. They're going to flip him face. He's going to be a heel still, but eventually Cody is going to show him the light and he will be a face. And then half the audience is saying, nah, that's a feud waiting to happen. We don't know. That's the beauty of it. It's written in such a way we don't know. That is the most important factor of this whole thing, is you have now thrown the fans off, because the fans are saying, could go either way. Maybe Cody will trust him, saying, well, he did the right thing the first time. I trust this guy. Oops, I shouldn't have trusted him. Or maybe he will see the light and he will end up being a very critical factor in helping Cody to achieve something, or he will achieve something. Who knows? Or maybe Cody will turn on him. We don't know. And that's the beauty of an angle done right, is you have now thrown the fans off. You swerved them by saying he's going to hit Cody with a chair. No, he didn't. And now you've left us in limbo where you say a number of things could happen. They could go in many directions. We always called it on this show, branches on the tree. Well, with that one move, it's like a chess move, folks. With that one move, you've opened up five moves. I could take any one of these five. Your move. And now you're sitting across the chessboard going, well, he's got five moves. If I move here, he'll do this. If I move here, he'll do that. If I move here, he'll do this. That's what they did with the fans. They put you in a position where they can move many ways. And you don't know what way they're going to move. That's good writing. And guess what? They have no writers. That's just them coming up with this stuff because they understand wrestling. Now, do I think that's the great way to do it, to have the wrestlers come up with stuff? No. It's working for them. It would never work for the WWE. But the beauty of this is it's working for them, and it's translating to the fans. And that's priceless, really. It really is. Now let me talk about NXT a little bit, because they put on a very good show. Lio Rush and Drew Gulak put on a great match. Athletically, Lio Rush certainly deserves to be the champion. As far as his behavior, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. The Rhea Ripley thing is very good, because for the very first time, it appears as though Shayna Baszler is the one who's kind of hesitant to fight somebody. which means the WWE threw a little snag on you. It's always Shayna Baszler saying, I'm the queen bee here, and everybody else is shaking in fear. Oh, I got to fight Shayna Baszler. I'll try to overcome her, but she's big and bad and vicious. And now for the first time, we have Shayna Baszler going, you boy, I might be up against it. And that's how the WWE is promoting this, as Rhea Ripley is not kidding, and she's going to beat the hell out of Shayna Baszler. So that's kind of cool. The return of Tommaso Ciampa, that's only going to help. He's a great wrestler. He's a great personality. Everything's great there. Excuse me. Now here's the downside, which a lot of people thought was the upside. The main event of Walter versus Kushida, undefeated versus undefeated, by the way. Somebody's O has got to go, as Mauro Ranallo says. I'm not sold on Walter. Everybody's like so big on this guy, and I've watched him two or three times now. And you'd think I'd like him because he's very old school. And I like old school. But I find him sloppy. There were parts in that match where Kushida's drop-kicking him, and he's obviously missed him. Because Walter is too slow getting up, or he's whatever. And then he just kind of, let me just throw myself over the top rope, even though you missed me by an inch, and gently land on my feet. I don't like wrestlers like that. Now, he did do the one good thing where Kushida slipped on the rope, and he just gave him a boot to the face, and they went on with the match. But some of Walter's selling and the way he's a little slow and clumsy. And I know he's a big guy and all, but there's a certain something about him that doesn't feel polished, all that polished to me. Not for a WWE-branded product. And I'm not sold on him being a world beater. I'm just not. Was this match good? It was good. Was it great? No, it wasn't. I don't, you know, but it was an A-plus match. It was. Walter throwing himself out of the ring when clearly he's being missed by drop kicks. And I mean throwing himself out. Like, let me slowly turn around, put my torso against the rope, and here I go. What? It didn't look real. It's not like, oh, man, his momentum knocked me out of the ring. No, it didn't look like that at all. Kushida slipping on the ropes. I thought it was it was average at best. I thought it was an average at best match. Which, you know, considering the two people are so highly touted, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm holding him to a higher standard. I did not think this was a great match. And I'm not sold on Walter. Maybe I'll give him another chance. I've seen him three times. I'm not all that impressed. I mean, if you want to talk about an A-plus match, then, you know, Tommaso Ciampa, Gargano and Andrade over there, Aleister Black and Velveteen Dream, these are all A-plus matches. If you're going to put that match in the same category, I don't know. I don't see it that way at all. So out of the night, I mean, we got a new champion. That's good. We got the establishment of Rhea Ripley as being a badass. That's good. Dakota Kai bites the dust. I'm not sure why they did that after reintroducing her, but whatever. Walter, they're making that faction a big faction. Okay. Not sold on him yet. Next week's looks promising. You know, the Fandango thing, I don't know what that was all about. Out of the two shows this week, I have to give it to AEW because I think that AEW established more ground. If you didn't know anything about wrestling, nothing, not one thing, and this is your first experience and you watch both shows, which show are you most likely to watch next week? And my answer to that would be AEW, because they left open-ended things where you say, oh, well, I wonder what's going to happen here. NXT really didn't. And again, I think some of it's arrogance. I think some of it's arrogance of, we don't care. Let them establish who they establish. We got the clout to make superstars, and they don't, which to a degree is true. But you better be careful, because if you lose 5, 6, 8 straight weeks in a row in the ratings, that's going to send a strong message to fans of who has the better show. First week meant nothing. Everyone's going to tune in. It's a new company, new organization, new network. Everybody's going to tune in to see it. Second week means something. But boy, when you get into the third, fourth, fifth, sixth week, if they're still drawing 600,000-700,000 more viewers than you, I don't know what to tell you. You better pull out all the stops. Now, they're going to have Finn Balor next week and the whole nine. They're trying as hard as they possibly can. But again, you're putting all the eggs in a basket of Finn Balor, a man who you undermined for years in the WWE. Not so much on NXT, but you undermined him in the WWE. And now you know what you're saying to fans? We know we blew Finn Balor totally, even though we gave him belts. We know we blew him totally on the main roster, but we're going to bring him back to where you liked him. So please watch, because he's going back where you liked him. How about if you treated him well to begin with? So we never did lose any interest in Finn Balor. How about that? See, this is not what you're seeing in AEW. They're not going to do this. And something else I like very much about the AEW is when a guy like Pac can sit down and say, what is my record? What is my record here on AEW? Have I lost? No. So why is this person getting a title shot? Why is that person getting a title shot? Why am I not the number one contender when I have a better record? That's logic. And when the announcers, face or heel, say, well, you have a point. You know, point well taken. That means, yes, we are acknowledging that your win-loss record matters to your future in AEW. That means that in kayfabe, the characters got to care about whether they lose or win. When Samoa Joe loses 5 straight matches and then he's the number one contender for the belt, why the hell should Samoa Joe care whether he wins or loses? I've lost 5 straight matches and I'm the number one contender. What does wins or losses matter? But can you imagine if you say, well, this month we're going to add up who won, you know, what, and that's the number one contender, then Samoa Joe's character could say, every one of these matches matter. I can't get disqualified in this match against somebody I should be able to beat because it could potentially cost me a shot at the title. You see how that plays into the storyline, folks? So that when you have a match, Samoa Joe against somebody, you know, he should be able to, you think he should be able to beat. Samoa Joe against, who? Cesaro, maybe? Oh, well, you know Samoa Joe's going to win. But then you add that extra, well, you know, the record is, if Samoa Joe loses this match in any way, shape, or form, that's going to throw him off of the number one contenders thing. And then it's suddenly Joe can't get disqualified. Joe can't get counted out. And then the match seems to mean more. And the announcers can play it off as if it does mean more. Remember, he doesn't have to be pinned or submitted. If he's counted out here, his record's going to fall. And so-and-so's going to jump above him. He's going to snatch that title shot. This match means something, folks. Suddenly that match means something. Where on a normal night, you say, oh, big deal. It'll be a good match, and Joe wins. Know what I mean, Mike?
Yeah, I get what you mean. I take it one step further. Remember back in, I mean, I'm going way back. Remember way back in the day, there was this thing called, well, one, there was time limits, number one, 20-minute time limit. And the time limits meant something because if you went to time limit, what would happen? They would call it, what, a draw. And that was another, you would have a win, you would have a chance to lose, and you would have a chance to draw. And draws meant something back then because, well, if you drew with the champion and you fought, you might get a chance to fight him again because of that draw, you know?
Right.
So
And guess who's doing that, Mike? AEW, we saw with Shawn Spears versus Jon Moxley. You know, 10 minutes gone, 10 minutes remaining.
Yeah, I mean, I like it, and that's the thing. And look, as far as AEW goes, before AEW, when they started signing the guys and they're talking about Britt Baker, DDS, or whatever she is, I didn't know about her. After two or three episodes, I'm starting to get a feel for this character, you know? I like the character, you know?
I agree with you. And listen, here's what AEW has done, in my opinion, wrong. I've said everything they've done right. Here's what they've done wrong. These million press conferences, these ridiculous self-serving, we are the politically correct, wonderful, all-inclusive, kumbaya. We don't need that. We don't need that. You are harming yourself doing that because you are making yourself look like a bunch of mamby-pamby. We just want to be politically correct in a sport that isn't politically correct or in a business that isn't politically correct. And it was irritating to people. But now that you've got your show on, you're not doing that anymore. Thank God. You're not saying, hey, fans, we want you to realize we are paying this person totally equal pay and they're getting, and we don't care. We don't care. We care about what we see on TV. Let them handle their own contracts. If they feel their contract's unfair, they can negotiate their own contract. I don't need to know. I don't need to know what you're doing. I need to know what you're showing me. No movie does that. The movies don't come out and say, you know, we're making a movie and we want you to know. This is what the extras are being paid and they're being treated well. And we have the exact amount of minority, the exact amount of females, the exact amount of transgender, the exact amount of we're being all inclusive. I don't care. Hire who you want to hire. Hire the best people for the job and give me a product, please. I don't care. I don't care who's making the hot dog, okay? I don't need to go to the hot dog factory and say, now, there better be an equal amount of minorities working here, and there better be an equal amount of women, and I want to see some transgender people, or I'm not buying your hot dog. I don't care. Hire the best people for the job and give me a hot dog that's good. And stop clouding my head with bullshit. That's what AEW did wrong to begin with, and I was getting pissed at them for it. Now they've stopped it, thank God. Just, you know what? Let your actions speak for themselves. Stop coming out there with the endless pat myself on the back routine. Okay? We get it. You're better than everybody else. We get it. You're more woke than everybody else. I don't care. Give me the product. Now, to their credit, they've given me the product. But just stop with the endless rhetoric and back patting. Because that I don't care about. Now, apparently, we should be talking a little bit about, I guess, Sasha Banks, her injury. It's a back injury. I don't know what to say. They don't know how – there's no word on how severe it is or isn't. And this is just why you can't put the belt on the girl. I'm sorry, but you can't because she's as injury-prone as can be. She has the ability to pull off great matches when she can, but she does not have the ability to stay healthy. So that's a piece of news we wanted to get to. Not sure where that's, you know, where that's leading. No idea. WWE, in their infinite wisdom, had the referee from the Hell in a Cell match release a statement. And the statement made it worse, not better. Instead of the referee issuing a statement saying, you're right, I had no reason to stop that match, that was dumb of me. Apparently Bray Wyatt was playing possum and he wasn't even hurt, but I didn't know it. I didn't know it. I thought he was gravely injured. It turns out he wasn't. He was playing me. He was playing Seth Rollins. He was playing the fans. That laying there for 5 or 6 minutes that looked so terrible to all you fans and made me think he was in a bad way. He was laughing about it. He fooled us all. So I stopped the match and I shouldn't have. Nope, that's not what he said. He doubled down. Bray Wyatt wasn't moving. It was very obvious he was in a bad way. Seth Rollins hit him with a sledgehammer, and I had severe concern for the safety of a wrestler, so I stopped the match. Well, that makes it worse. Because now what you're saying is, well, Seth Rollins beat the hell out of The Fiend so much that I was worried that they were going to kill The Fiend. The poor Fiend. So I had to stop the match to save the poor Fiend. Wow, that's terrible, WWE. That is terrible. When all you really had to do was have the referee say, he bluffed us. When he popped up after that, I realized he bluffed me. It's exactly what he wanted me to do. He was playing a psychological game with me. He wanted me to stop that match. To prove to me, to prove to you, to prove to Seth Rollins, I'm in your head. You thought you had me. He wasn't even hurt, folks. But he bluffed me. And I'm sorry. I stopped the match for the wrong reason. Then we could have said, oh, that's WWE trying to damage control. This way, Mike, they've doubled down and made it worse.
Yeah, it made it worse. And you look at all the things. I mean, how many things were in between that sledgehammer and Bray Wyatt? You know,
yeah.
A bunch of chairs, a ladder, a toolbox, or whatever. And the toolbox was—he hit the toolbox. He didn't hit the chairs. He didn't hit the ladder. He didn't hit. He hit the toolbox. The toolbox is empty. It's an aluminum toolbox, and it makes a lot of noise, but it's not going to hurt him, you know.
Right. And oh, by the way, Bray Wyatt used a hammer four times that size 5 minutes ago, and there was no stopping of the match. So yeah, WWE doubles down, makes that worse. Anyway, back to the shows. Look, AEW put on a very solid show. Very solid. Now, I'm going to tell you this, and it might anger some people, but it's just the way I see it. I think AEW is going to produce a few stars, but I don't think it's who they think it's going to be. Remember when John Moxley was, oh, my God, you've signed Dean Ambrose. Oh, my God. I don't think he's going to be that big of a deal. Because removed from the very thing that he said he didn't like about the WWE, all the silly, goofy, Dean Ambrose is a little wacky in the head promos and all the scripted whatevers, he ain't that interesting. And his ring style is, it's okay. I don't think he's going to be that guy. I don't. Darby Allin might be. MJF might be. I think you're going to find that some of these guys who went over there saying, I'm going to be the biggest friggin' thing in this, isn't going to be in the long run. That's my take anyway. My second take is that whatever the hell Goldust does, Dustin Rhodes does, physically, to keep himself in the type of shape he is in to do what he does at his age, he should write a book. He should write a friggin' book. Because there is no rust on him at all. They should call him No Rust Dustin. Because I've never seen anything like it. I really haven't. I've never seen anything like that. Usually, you know, you have those guys and they're kind of legendary or whatever, and they're in their 50s, and you're like, well, they're going to get in and they'll do one or two spots, and you got to understand it's going to be a little slower and the pace is going to be this way, and he's not going to do too much. Just, you know, just keep it kind of whatever. Him and Shawn Michaels are approximately the same age. Okay? Approximately the same age. And I would guarantee you that if you ask 1,000 people Who do you think's in better shape in the peak of their career, Shawn Michaels or Goldust? People would have said, well, Shawn Michaels. I don't know, man. Who's still going like they're 25 years old? I'm watching it and I'm saying, am I in a time capsule? What the hell is going on here? He defies the aging process. And the ring will do it like nothing else. I'm at a loss for words at how polished he can still be and accurate and what's the right word for it? Vibrant in his wrestling at his age, Todd. It's amazing.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about Dustin Rhodes, and he could still wrestle as he's still in his teens and late teens, early 20s, like he did back in the day.
I never see anything like it. I'm watching the mic and I'm saying, well, I don't know. I mean, why are everybody's, you know, oh, DDP yoga, DDP, DDP. Somebody better tell Dustin to write a book.
Right. Think about it. What did they, one of the, I don't know if it was Shivani or if it was JR, and they said, well, there's a reason why they call him the natural. You know?
Yeah.
There's a reason, you know. This guy, we all the time talk about how good R-Truth is. R-Truth is another one that's like that.
Yeah, he's another one. Yep.
Right. And you look at R-Truth, and he, I mean, you would think he's, you know, 35 instead of 45, you know. That's the thing. You look at Dustin Rhodes, what is he, in his early 50s?
Early 50s, early to mid-50s.
You would think he'd be in his early 30s, you know. And if you remember him back in his early 30s, he was 280 pounds. This is,
yeah.
What, 230 pounds?
Well, see, that's another thing, Mike. It's not like he is Ricochet, where you say, well, you know, a guy that small and that light and always in shape, maybe in his 50s, he's still going to be in pretty good shape. No, Dustin was always like a big, lanky, not too cut, sort of, you know, natural physique sort of a guy. He was the exact type of guy you think would age to the point where at like 40 something he's like, yeah, that's it for me. No, not at all. It's really impressive. And here's the fun thing, he's going to be a big name in AEW. He's not just going to be a joke. Fans are into him. So that's a good sign, because he's always had a ton of charisma. Now, I'm interested to see what they're going to do with Jake Hager in the long run. Jake Hager is somebody who does need a little help with that charisma. He usually does need a mouthpiece or a gimmick. You know, the We the People thing worked for him. Zeb Coulter worked for him. We'll see what happens on his own. He certainly is fine in the ring. There's no problem with that at all. I don't know if he can get himself over to a huge point in AEW. Maybe he can. But I do think that some of these dark horse underdog guys, everybody said, well, Kenny Omega's just going to wait. You just wait. As soon as the big audience sees Kenny Omega, he's going to be an ultra super duper supernova type star. I don't know. I don't think so. But some of these other guys that are coming from the back of the pack and you're saying, oh, they're capturing the fans' attention. These guys are actually getting themselves over. And I think AEW is going to realize in the coming months, gee, a few of the guys we thought were going to be our biggest names are probably going to be middle of the pack. And a few of these guys we thought were going to be our middle of the pack guys, they've risen quite rapidly. And I hope AEW, in their infinite wisdom, is smart enough to say, I'm sorry, guys, but we got to go with a hot hand. In other words, don't hold these guys back that the fans are starting to, clamor for, because then you got a Cesaro situation. Then you got a Finn Balor situation. There you got a, you know, former Bray Wyatt situation, where fans are saying, yes, this is what we want. And he's, oh, no, we promised these spots to bigger, different guys that you keep, no, got to keep these guys down. You don't want that. If MJF catches fire, run with him. If Darby Allin catches fire, run with him. I don't care who catches fire, run with him. And if that means the Kenny Omegas, the Young Bucks, the John Moxleys have to take a back seat for a little bit, tough. Tough. You had the same chance as anybody else to get over with the fans, and let's see who the fans really want and are clamoring for, and that's what you give them. And I do think AEW will probably do that, where WWE would not. That's the critical difference. If AEW, or let me go the other way. If WWE signed a guy like Darby Allin and said, well, he's middle of the pack guy. That's what we want. We're actually promoting the other guy. And the fans went nuts for him. They'd say, well, bury him. Make sure the fans don't cheer for him because that's not the guy that we're putting over. I don't know, man. I think Cody Rhodes is the type of guy to say, well, that's who you want. Let's push him. Because I don't know if they were going to push MJF like that. He got such a great reaction week one that I think they probably said, you know what? And remember what fans were saying online? How come if he's his best friend, he didn't come down to help Cody week number one? So what'd they do week number two? They said, fans are right about that, aren't they? I guess if you were my best friend, even though you are a heel, you probably would have come down to help me. So I think you should come down to help me. Fans have been wondering about that, and we owe that an explanation because that's logic, right? So, Mike, it seems like they have the ability to call an audible based on what the fans are thinking or saying, and that's a good sign.
Right. And look, think about – here's another example. What happened after that tag team match? They spent a whole – even through the break with the private party celebrating with the fans, you know.
It's true.
Even, yep. You know, and it seemed to me that that's who, even though the Young Bucks are the people that are known, it seems to me that the private party got a reaction. And that's another example of them calling an audible and allowing them to do that because they saw that reaction.
I agree with you. If this company is telling me, as a company, we are willing to call an audible, we have an idea where we're going. But if we see the feedback of the fans and we read, you know, the social media things and they say, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. It probably should be this way. We will definitely say, okay, well, maybe you're right. And we're willing to work around that. Then guess what? You have solved the biggest problem in professional wrestling today. The unwillingness to listen to the fans. And it's such an easy thing to solve. It's just that you can't have a gigantic ego. And you got to be willing to say, look, at the end of the day, the paying customer's right. I do believe having MJF come down and do this is a direct result. Do I think they had that plan for 2 weeks? I don't think so. I really think that they looked at the reaction to week one and said, one of the negatives we got is that why wouldn't my friend come down and help me? That's kind of true, isn't it? We probably should do something about that so the fans don't think we're illogical. Well, they fixed the problems. All the critique I had from them week one, why didn't they do this? Why didn't this happen? They solved in week two. So how can I be mad at that? How can I say, well, they still did it, though? Yeah, but they solved it. So there you go. If that's the case, everybody makes mistakes. Everybody, you know, might say, oh, we let that slip. You're right. But if you correct it, well, then we know you're trying. That's all anybody can ask, is that you try. And we can see that you're trying. When we see you're not trying, as in the case of the WWE often, that's when fans get angry. Can you believe to this day there are people writing me saying, during the Hell in a Cell match, no one was chanting AEW. That's a lie. That happened on the night before on SmackDown. Yes, it happened on SmackDown. It also happened during Hell in a Cell. Don't tell me there were no AEW chants. Maybe they cut them out of the replay. They were there. Anyway, let's rate both of these shows. I'll start with AEW. Again, I think it has a kind of a WCW feel to the look of it and the broadcasting. The broadcasting was a little better this week. I'm not an Excalibur fan. Sorry, I'm not. Shoot me, I'm not. Oh, by the way, wrestling world agrees with me, too, that Corey Graves is no good. Remember when he was the darling? Oh, Corey Graves. He's wonderful. While we were telling you, no, he's not wonderful. He's actually annoying, and he's taken away from the product. Now, after 5 months of us telling that, suddenly again, the woke people say, you know, it's just come to my attention that perhaps Corey Graves is taking away from the product a little. I just thought of that. Yeah, well, we thought of it 7 months ago and told you that 7 months ago. Anyway, not an Excalibur fan. The other, you know, Shivani and Jim Ross, hard to go wrong. Hard to go wrong. I thought most of the matches were excellent. I loved some of the interaction. I'm not as huge a fan of their women's division as I thought I would be. Let me just say that. I don't think they have enough interesting characters. They have great athletes, and they're not interesting characters. I'm going to give this a B+. I think there was some really, really, really good stuff in it. But I think they need to work a little bit more on fleshing out some characterizations for people. And also, I think they need to kind of get away from that WCW feel in the production. Aside from that, B+. What's your thought? Let's go to Mike first.
I think you're right. I think that's a B+. And I think you're also right about the women's division. I mean, like I said, Britt Baker she can go in the ring, and she has she has some charisma about her, and she's good on the mic. So, but they don't have enough of those type of people in that women's division. Riho, I don't know how good she can speak the language, you know.
Right.
So, you know, so I just don't know about some of these people that they have. And we haven't seen all of their women's division yet, but we'll probably get to know them over the next few weeks. But that's B+.
All righty, let's go down to Todd. Todd, AEW this week.
I got to go with you guys. B+, I meant to say.
Okay, so we all enjoyed it. Now, NXT. Look, NXT is my preferred brand, as everybody knows, but I'm also not blind. And I see that a lot of the moves they're making is how do we counteract what AEW is doing? And that is precisely the wrong approach. The right approach is how do we make the best show possible and then let the chips fall where they may? Take commercial breaks through the first half hour to fuck over AEW. Every move they make is like the counter. Remember when I told you it's like a game of chess? Well, instead of attacking, they're always defending, 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 defending. Well, you're never going to put anybody in checkmate if you keep defending. And that's what I feel the WWE is doing. The Leo Rush match was a good match. The Walter Kushida match, I think it was just an average match. And the rest of it felt decent, fine, but, you know, I don't think it was a B+. So I'm going to give this one a flat C. I think it was average, Mike.
I think I'm going to give it a little bit better. I think I'm going to give it a C+ because I really do like how they're handling Rhea Ripley.
That I do think they're doing well. I just think that every move they make seems to be like in counter move to what in other words, AEW is leading the dance. Todd, what's your thought on NXT this week?
I gotta go with you. I gotta go with a flat C.
Okay, so AEW wins this week, according to us. That's 2 weeks in a row. the danger here, folks, is this. The danger is that if AEW becomes the show that everybody watches on Wednesday, NXT suffers. And when NXT starts to suffer, Vince McMahon is going to pull the trigger and say, take all the guys that have potential out of there, bring them up, and do what you did with 205 Live, which is to hell with them. And we don't want that. What I would love to see, is NXT simply say, look, this is not about who the better brand is or who fans prefer or whatever. We're putting on our own style of wrestling. We're doing what we do. We're hoping the fans like it. We're hoping you'll watch. And that's it. Let AEW do what they want to do. But we got this Canis Mas Macho thing going on where I won't budge. No, I won't budge. Neither one of these guys are going to move from the time slot. And they're just going to sit here and they're going to go head to head to head. AEW is saying there's no competition. We always had our day planned. We weren't the one who brought up NXT and to go head to head with us. We picked a day that didn't go head to head with any of Vince's products. Vince doesn't have a show on Wednesday. Never did. We didn't compete with Monday Night Raw. We didn't even compete with Friday Night SmackDown when we were going to do a Friday night show. We picked Wednesday when there was no wrestling. Hell, we didn't even compete with Impact. We put our product on at a time where there was no other wrestling. They have that to say, and it's the truth. It was WWE who said, oh, you're on Wednesday? Well, now NXT's on Wednesday. Same time. So who fired first? WWE, quite obviously. And now the WWE comes out and says, well, we're putting on NXT to exact opposite of AEW. In direct competition with them. And then claims that AEW is, you know, the one who's firing shots at them. That's ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous. I do want to say before we leave two things. One is that if you have not checked out the NWA show on YouTube, please check it out. There's no way I would be on this radio 24 hours a day, 7 days a week if we covered everything. I can't cover everything. But I'm telling you that if you're a fan of old school wrestling, you will like this. It has such an old school feel to it that it really was like, damn, I was very impressed by it. I liked it a lot. I really did. And I'm looking forward to more episodes of it. Also, I'm going to tell you right now, Impact this week was very good. Impact is the black sheep of the wrestling family. They never get a fair break. There's so much other wrestling going on that Impact is like the lost sheep who you say, oh, yeah, Impact, I watched it a few times 2 years ago and I didn't like it. Yeah, well, a lot has changed. A lot has changed. They're putting on quality stuff. This is a really good time for wrestling. There's a lot of really good quality stuff going on. Maybe too much. You know, some of this stuff is getting lost in the shuffle. That's the problem. Any of these federations on their own, without a 10-ton of competition, would probably be really, really big. But there's so much going on, it's almost impossible to watch it all. But I did want to give kudos to the NWA show, and I do want to give kudos to Impact. They're doing a great job. I don't know if you got to see any of that, Mike, but that. What's your thoughts?
I'm going to have to go back. I've seen it. I've seen the NWA thing pop up on my list of things to see on YouTube. So I'm going to have to check that out. And I've so infrequently watched Impact. I've watched it a couple of times, but I'm going to have to go back and watch it to see how good it is. So, yeah, I've got to.
It's starting to get it's starting to get real interesting. It really is. Sami Callihan and Rich Swann put on a great match. Just really, really good match. And they're doing kind of, well, I'll let you guys decide. Again, we can't cover everything. Todd, were you able to catch either Impact or NWA on YouTube?
I caught the replay of it on YouTube. I wasn't home. Watched a live episode, but it was a pretty good episode. The match I liked was the main event when Nick, formerly known
Aldis.
As Magnus, as the NWA champion, took on the guy named Tim Storm.
Yeah. Old school, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, folks. If you get a chance, check that out. Anyway, we will be back here on Sunday with more Wrestle Talk. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.